Great to see everybody again. I am thrilled to be able to introduce your next speaker in our keynote for the conference because she's somebody very near and dear to our heart and to the Berkshire Zonta Club's heart as well. Christian Vanjenhoven, it has a beautiful bio that Mary Knight included in your program, and I would encourage you to check it out. What I wanted to just kind of introduce you to is the Kristen that we know and why we were so inspired by her to choose her as our Women of the Year this year, one of six people that we recognize on International Women's Day. There was a huge field of candidates that were nominated, and she was one that rose to the top, and I'll explain why a little bit, why we're so impressed with her, and it's because I love her her motto, which is that what every woman can make a difference, or everybody can make a difference. And one of the things that we found that you don't always find in people is when they can combine a passion and their talents with giving back and making a real difference in the world. And so we see a lot of people in the professions that are helpers, the social workers and the nurses and the all of the helping professions that we've chosen to honor in the past. What I loved about Kristen is she said, my passion is in the creative arts, and this is what I'm great at, but I still think that I can give back through this. So she created this program called WAM, which I believe she's going to talk to you about, the WAM Theater. And their premise is simple, that you can make a difference. It's where art meets advocacy or activism, absolutely. And this theater produces incredible productions in Berkshire County. The summer stock that we have in Berkshire County is amazing, but she's able to focus in on important issues of our day and keep it really entertaining. She educates, people flock to her shows, and it raises such an incredible awareness. And not only does she do that as far as helping gender equality and all of these big conversations happen in a really entertaining way, but she also donates proceeds from every, or she structured the company to donate proceeds from every performance to nonprofits in Berkshire County. I think you're over $90,000 in donations so far. So she's built this advocacy and this giving back through what she does best, which is the creative arts. And so we just find that sometimes people need to be honored and recognized not only for what they do, but for what they're doing for others in that job. And so she's always been a friend to Zonta, always lets us bring our materials and talk about our programs. And so we were so really pleased to have her be our inspiration too at, I think, our last fall conference, and to bring her here again. So without further ado, I hope you get to know our beloved Kristen Vanjenhoven. This is the first time in my life that I'm happy that I have a really loud voice.
Do you want a board chair to put your presentation up on?
Yeah. And while you do that, I thought it might be first. This is the first in-person conference, right, since the pandemic?
Yes.
And it is so hard to put on events even pre-pandemic, and it's even harder to put on events like in this senior year of the pandemic. So I think we have to give another round of applause to Governor Donna and the amazing board who have been busting their butts. Have been working so hard to make today happen, and to all of you for like going out of your way and making time in your schedules to be here. Can everybody hear me at the back?
Yes.
All right. So I did write a whole bunch of stuff, which I will say, and it's about 30 minutes, and Donna said I didn't have to make it shorter. But I also have like a feeling that I'd like to do just a little get to know you thing that I like to do when I start things. So this will help us all figure out where our like-minded friends are. If you are somebody who prefers coffee to tea, stand up. If you're a coffee drinker, stand up. Look around at your fellow coffee drinkers. Thank you. You may sit down. So the rest of you like tea or herbal tea, so you can find your fellows, sister tea drinkers.
Soda.
If you prefer a beach holiday to a mountain holiday, stand up.
I take you.
Here are our beach holiday people. And oh yeah, perfect. Excellent. Thank you. I'm a mountain holiday person, so that's nice.
All right. If you are a winter person versus a summer person, stand up or put your hand up. What people? See, normally, like, nobody stands up. That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you for doing that. Now you know a few things about each other that can spur some conversation. And as you said, that without Audrey, there would be no Donna. Without Donna, there would be no Kristen, because you have busted your butt to get me here. And so I thank you for that. So hello, Zonchins.
Hello.
Hi.
Well done. It is such an honor, truly, to be here with all of you incredibly inspiring people. Today, in line with the conference theme of growth, of growing your knowledge, your connections, and your impact to make a better world for women and girls, I would love to share how my time with WAM Theater over the past 14 years has led to a personal growth journey that I never, ever could have anticipated. I am such a different person now than when I started WAM 14 years ago, a more informed, an evolved feminist and activist, and I hope a more humble human. So today, I'm going to share some of the stories of growth from the past 14 years and how they have led to the decision to step down from WAM at the end of this year. I hope that by sharing this story, you will all feel resonance and affirmation of your own growth story, a renewed sense of pride at your own astonishing accomplishments in Zonta, and I'm sure outside of Zonta, maybe gain a few new strategies or gain a new tip or two, and find some new inspiration or courage to continue the very important work that you are all doing at Zonta, especially on those days when it feels that what we are all doing around gender equity may not be making a dent, or indeed when we see it all going backwards. But first, Halifax has had a really challenging summer. The impact of the climate crisis and how it perpetuates and magnifies structural inequalities like gender equity sure has come to our doorsteps. There's also more war in the world, not less. The racial reckoning is ongoing, and we continue to recover from a pandemic and so much more. So we all deserve to recognize and feel our grief for the lost rights and the decreased safety of women and girls here and all around the world. It is indeed a critical time to stand together, and I am honored to be with you all here today as we uplift women and girls. I'm also really, really happy that we started by acknowledging the Mi'kma'ki, the lands that we're on. The most recent play that I directed, What the Constitution Means to Me, was produced in Albany, New York, which is upstate New York, for those of you who may not know. And that's where the Iroquois Confederacy was started. And in my research, while I prepared to direct the play, I was told this story, which apparently came from Gloria Steinem, although I haven't been able to confirm that. Maybe somebody here will be able to. But I'd love to share with you as an additional acknowledgement of these lands that we're on today. America's founders, when creating the Constitution, they asked the Iroquois elders, the male ones, to join them so they could learn from them, as the Constitution, in some ways, is inspired by the Iroquois Confederacy. Apparently, when the elders walked in, the first thing they said was, "Where are the women?" Women were and they were an integral part of creating the Iroquois Confederacy, and they're an integral part of Native culture as a whole, as we heard from Muin. So it is fitting to acknowledge the Mi'kma'ki people while we launch this conference. It's also fitting to share my connections with Zonta. My first connection with Zonta was a small presentation about WAM at a Berkshire Club dinner meeting. I was then invited to do the keynote at the Zonta District 1 meeting in Pittsfield in October 2015. Were any of you there?
Yeah.
Nice. The reasons that I got to Pittsfield were these late Zonta members and incredible women, Key Hollister and Millie Blum. They were the ones who made that keynote happen. And I know that they're smiling on this moment, thrilled that this journey with Zonta continues. So thank you, Key and Millie. And hi, to Linda and Sheila and Sandy. Thank you for introducing me. The Berkshire Club members who are here, who could all be doing, and you could all be doing a keynote yourselves. Then in 2016, I was a keynote speaker for Zonta Florida as part of a women's empowerment series, also thanks to Millie. And then, as Sandy mentioned earlier this year, I was honored to be named one of the 6 Berkshire Club Zonta 2023 Women of the Year. At that event, I met Donna, told her that I went to Dalhousie University and that I started my career here in Nova Scotia. She immediately decided she was going to work her magic and her persistence, and with the help and generosity of Governor Donna, Guardian Angel Mary, and the Berkshire Club, here I am, having this extraordinary full circle moment. I have been wanting to come back to Halifax for so long. See, the last time that I was here, I was young, wide-eyed, newly minted college graduate. It was 1997. And then right out of school, I was lucky enough to start working as an actor at Shakespeare by the Sea and Neptune Theater. Perhaps some of you even saw me running around Point Pleasant Park, where I played Helena in A Midsummer Night's Dream, or Rosalind in As You Like It, back in the late 1990s. That was such an exciting time launching my professional career in the theater in Halifax. I remember being full of excitement and fear for the road ahead. And now I return here nearly 30 years later, and I feel exactly the same way. You know, I always wanted to retire here in Nova Scotia, and being here yesterday reminded me why. It's all about quality here, not quantity. I loved that I could go to the store here in Halifax and all around Nova Scotia when we did our tour and performed in gymatoriums at 8 a.m. in Cape Breton. And people wanted to get to know me, have a chat, see how things were going. Nobody was in a rush. It was always people over product here, relationship over transaction. Those values were planted in me here in Nova Scotia, and they have anchored me throughout my career. I wanted to retire here until I moved to the Berkshires in 2008, and I fell in love with it. It's an incredible place, very, very special, with incredible arts and culture and glorious outdoor adventure. So you all must come there the next time that the Berkshire Club hosts a conference. Now, I love both places, and I couldn't be more privileged to have this full circle moment and also to have no idea now where I'm going to retire. At the 2015 Zonta conference in the Berkshires, I told you the story of Wham Theater, a professional theater company that I co-founded in 2010 that uses theater to benefit women and girls. I shared with you all in 2015 where the inspiration came from to use theater to take action for women and girls, how we went about implementing what we call our double philanthropic mission, and how our first 5 years had gone. Since then, we've had our 10-year anniversary, then a pandemic, and now we're heading into our 15th anniversary season. And in May of this year, we publicly announced that I'd be stepping down from Wham, and now we're just about to hire our new artistic leader. You see, the story of Wham started in 2009 when I read the book Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide by Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wu Dunn. I see some nods. Who here has read that book? It's a fantastic book. Please get it from the library and read it. It's full of stories of women all around the world who have found ways through sheer courage, resilience, and perseverance to turn their oppression into opportunity. So once again, it's called Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide, by Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wu Dunn. The book's thesis is that the oppression of women and girls is the seminal moral issue of our time, just as slavery was in the 19th century. In the book, Kristof and Wu Dunn say that outsiders can truly make a difference. You all know that to be true, but I never believed that before the book. But the book thoroughly inspired me and it made me want to take action and join the movement to emancipate women and girls, ergo Wham. But prior to Wham, I had generally been one of those people who turned a blind eye to women's issues as they seemed so huge, so insurmountable, and so horrible that there was obviously no way that I could make a difference, so I pretty much ignored it all. But the book inspired me so much that when I put it down, I knew I wanted to take action. As a theater artist, I wanted to find a way to use my art to benefit women and girls. I didn't have the personal capacity to write big checks, and I knew that I didn't have the resilience to be on the front lines and deal head on with issues like sex trafficking or gender-based violence, because I'm a highly sensitive person. But I knew that I could create an entertaining evening in the theater, and that I could use that as my philanthropy to support those people who we desperately need, the ones who are brave enough to be on the front lines. So the first part of WAM's mission states that we create theatrical events for everyone with a focus on women theater artists or the stories of women and girls. That means we raise money to produce professional plays, especially ones by women playwrights or ones that share the stories of women and girls. The first part of our mission also means that we create jobs for professional theater artists, actors, designers, stage managers, and in particular, women theater artists. The second part of our double philanthropic mission states that we donate a portion of our box office proceeds, as Sandy said, from our events to organizations that benefit the lives of women and girls. That means we work really hard to get people to get out of their sweatpants and off the couch and into the theater and pay to see a play that we produce. Then we donate a portion of those box office proceeds to a women's organization that we have chosen as the recipient for that show. We choose a different organization for each production, and we have a thoughtful and intentional process around the selection. And to date, we have donated nearly $100,000 to 25 local and global organizations. Our donations have helped women who want to engage with their civic duty take leadership classes so that they can run for office. It's helped Indigenous women have healing circles. It's helped women-led community organizations defend and advance the rights of the poor and promote fair elections. We've kept girls in school, and we've helped provide scholarships for girls to study with professional scientists. We've helped women rebuild after an earthquake, and we've helped women, immigrant women who were victims of domestic violence, gain the help that they needed on their path to a green card. One year, we gave to a program called ROPE, the Rites of Passage and Empowerment for Girls program. The Berkshire Club knows Shirley Edgerton, who started that program, was another sister nominee, honoree earlier this year. Thanks to the donation that ROPE received from WAM, they were able to take their girls on a college tour. And many of the girls in the program were among the first in their family to even go to college. And normally ROPE could afford to take just a few of the girls, but because the show was such a success, we were able to donate enough that they were able to take all the girls in two van loads on a college tour. I often think of those eighth graders standing on a college campus thinking, maybe we could go here someday. And they're standing there because WAM put on a play. The most amazing thing is that those eighth graders are now like graduating from college. So my feelings about WAM are best encapsulated when I'm standing on stage after the final curtain call of a closing performance, getting ready to make the donation to our recipient. I look over at the artists, and many of them are women, and all of them are paid. I look at the audience, who have just enjoyed a story written by a woman playwright, which makes me so proud considering that less than 20% of all plays produced nationally in both Canada and America are written by women, less than 20%. And finally, I look over at the recipients who are about to receive a donation, and I think of the impact that WAM has beyond jobs and storytelling. I think about the 13 house mothers at the Mother of Peace Orphanage in South Africa, who were the beneficiaries of a 2014 production. I heard about them through a local Berkshire resident who had long been involved with the orphanage, and her dream was that the house mothers of the orphanage would have some money of their own. You see, those 13 house mothers raised 84 orphan children in mother-headed households, and in return, They get housing and food and a whole lot of love. Thanks to a show called In Darfur about the internally displaced persons in Darfur, we were able to donate $385 to each mother, which is the equivalent of about 4,000 South African dollars. So many of them used it to further their own education or their daughter's education. And one of them built a room onto her house that is now a rental income. So how's that for economic empowerment? The impact that WAM has had over the years reminds me in a very small way of the enormous impact that Zonta has had since your founding. It's extraordinary what you have all accomplished to better the lives of women and girls. So with passion, the idea to start WAM was born, but it's the hard work of building a nonprofit that has made the idea a reality. Many of you here are entrepreneurs or started your own businesses or lead departments at businesses or companies. But for me, starting WAM was the first time that I was a producer. I started as an actor, I became a teacher, and then a director, and now filled with this energizing desire to create opportunity for women and girls through theater, I was a producer. I went through loads of what I call 101 classes. Here are some of the things that we did back in 2010 that I had to learn how to do from scratch. It was a huge growth curve. We created a website, a blog, a Facebook page, a Twitter page, or now an X page, e-blasts, e-newsletters. We became an official nonprofit, we built a board, and we learned how to put that all-important donate button on our website. We sent a letter to our 100 closest family and friends, and we started raising money. We learned how to write a press release, create a press list, build relationships with the press. Throughout that learning curve, I did an extraordinary amount of on-the-job learning. And for the first time in my life, I was not afraid to ask for help when I didn't know what something meant, especially things like negotiating contracts or getting insurance or organizing travel, dealing with the actors union or directors union or designers union, keeping track of the financial records, bookkeeping, you name it. I had to learn about it from scratch and I needed help in doing so. That doesn't mean that I wasn't terrified or nervous about every single thing all the time. It just meant that I wasn't afraid to ask for help. And I was motivated to move through my nerves and my fear because the mission felt more important than my own nerves and fear. But my learning curve was not only around logistics and running a company. It was also around my own cultural competency and my own white privilege. One story of growth for me in this area came a few years ago when a dear respected colleague of color said to me, "White women always need time." I asked her to explain that more to me, and she said, "Having the time to think and ponder about something is a privilege that can come with being white." She doesn't have that luxury. If she's in a meeting and a racist comment is made, she has to speak up or let the moment pass, which reinforces the unjust behavior. This wonderful colleague said to me that all too often she is in a meeting with white supportive colleagues, something uncomfortable happens, and they all complain about it in the bar afterwards, but at that moment, none of them speak up. She said this exact thing had actually happened to her at a recent town hall meeting. And when she asked her white colleagues in the bar afterwards why they didn't speak up, they said things like, "I didn't know what to say. I was afraid that I would say the wrong thing," or "I panicked," or "I needed time to think." This discomfort around speaking up in the moment sounded all too familiar to me. And I realized in that moment that if I truly believe in a culture of empathy, equity, and belonging, which I do, then this discomfort around speaking up is something that I had to learn to move through. It was my responsibility as her colleague, as a change maker in our community, and as a human being. Mm-hmm. To own the power of my privilege and speak up. Since then, WAM has become a civic organization that embraces intersectional feminism, the feminism that acknowledges how multiple forms of discrimination overlap. Like all of you in this room, WAM understands that to address one piece of systemic discrimination means that we have to address them all. And this is ongoing, active, and personal work at WAM for the staff and the board. So I have poured my heart and soul into WAM for the past 14 years, and I have learned a ton along the way about myself, my community, and the power of speaking up. I've learned, for example, that I have way more resilience than I thought, that I am able to ask for help when I need it, and that it's okay to say these three powerful words. I don't know. I have learned not to say, I just run a little theater company, and diminish the very real impact of our work. I have learned about the complexities of the word woman in today's world, and the value of including men in the conversation around women's issues. We need them. I have learned the infinite value of building relationships, making connections, especially with people who are not like me. I have learned how important it is to truly understand the word intersectional and to find ways to engage in dialogue around the intersecting issues of racism, homophobia, ableism, and transphobia, for example. I have also learned that it's really hard to talk to people about women's issues if they think that there aren't any anymore. Along the way, I have learned about the plethora of incredible people in our community who are doing the hard, hard work of trying to create opportunity for every member of our beloved communities. I'm sure you all know a ton of these people, and you are all of these people yourselves. Over and over again, my eyes have been opened to the very real struggles that people are going through in our community and to the amazing people who are doing all they can to help people overcome those struggles. And over again, I have also learned about the constant struggle of wanting to give up. Because for me, with my highly sensitive personality, it always feels too hard, every single day. Most days, I have a moment of complete overwhelm where I have no idea how I will get through, or I simply want to go into my bed and hide. I just want to quit, you know? Perhaps some of you can relate. But then, I remember the stories of the incredible women featured in Half the Sky, or my wonderful colleague at her town hall meeting, and all the amazing people like you who are working hard for a better life. And I know that I have to go on. After all, others are trying to survive. I'm just trying to put on a play. So I do my meditation, I take a walk in nature, or I take a long hot bath, or I read my People magazine, or any of the other strategies that I've gained along the way to stay centered and calm, and I keep going. I often refer to WAM as my PhD. I genuinely always felt that WAM is where most of my growth and awakening as a person and an activist was happening. And there sure has been a lot of that. I'd like to share some more key ways that my work at WAM has deepened my growth and changed my perspective, just in case they're helpful to you or reinforce the journey that you're on. Number one, cultural humility. This is really the biggest one for me overall. Cultural humility is a practice of self-reflection of how one's own background and the background of others impact all of the different areas of your life. As I continue to challenge myself to question my ego and dial up my humility, I experience much deeper meaning and fulfillment and community in the work. I haven't yet found ease with the new culturally humble Kristen, but I have made strides in getting to know her and having her find her feet. She's come out more and more, which feels lovingly aligned with how I want and how we need to walk through the world. Two, positive psychology and character strengths. Positive psychology forms the basis of my work as a leader now. I regularly have opening quotes at meetings, moments of mindfulness meditation as a team, some random dance breaks, regular gratitude practices like how grateful I am to be here today, or I ask questions and do activities that promote positive emotions. I also now have a practice of pointing out character strengths to my team members. Who here already knows about the VIA character strengths, who has done, I'm sure Linda does, or who have done the test or know what they are? Well, if you like a good test, go home, look up VIA character strengths, V-I-A, and it's an awesome way to find out more about yourself and also to make other people feel really good. Pointing out my team's character strengths is very aligned with my own love language to provide affirmation. And my team has expressed that they appreciate it also. I realize as I give character strength feedback to the team and the artists that we work with, that they rarely hear this sort of feedback. It's inevitably that they're a bit embarrassed, but they're proud and they're happy to hear it, which feels great. I personally also now have a clear set of values that guides and anchors my work as a leader. They are abundance, making a difference, flexibility, self-development, and appreciation. A few more golden nuggets that I carry around with me include around listening. Don't talk so much, which is really funny given that now I've been talking for like 20 minutes. Focus on building meaningful relationships. Lead with curiosity. See lots of nods. Let go of the task and the action and focus on the relationship, on being. Listen for thoughts, emotions, values. Around speaking up, a question that I often ask myself now after learning this from a coach in an inclusive leadership program is, how much of my light does this room need? Any? Maybe a cozy light in the corner? Or a shining spotlight on somebody else? Or a full blast of light, like right now? And how can I speak up with humility? How can I always make sure to ask clarifying questions? Can I pause for 7 seconds when things get uncomfortable? How can I make sure that I don't let a moment of harm go by if I'm a bystander? If it does, can I circle back later? I ask myself, how can I best engage in those moments? I often think of the 5 D's that I learned from a free Right to Be training. Any of you can do it. It's free and it's online at righttobe.org. About how to be a good bystander. Document, distract, delegate, delay, direct. Is there a way I can document what I'm seeing somehow? Can I distract this in the situation somehow? Can I delegate to somebody official? Can I delay by circling back later to check in? Or address the situation directly if I feel safe? Around responding. How can I respond rather than react? We all know the famous saying that's attributed to Viktor Frankl. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. Here are 3 questions I try to ask myself as I contemplate a response. Is it kind? Is it true? Is it necessary? I try not to do something without thinking it through. I try to talk to whoever needs to be involved. I try to figure out what's actually wanted or needed. I try not to just do. Most importantly, I observe what's going on in my body. It's become so important to observe my own body in different situations, especially difficult ones, and observe what's going on there and how that can inform what my response can be. Pause, breathe, listen. Finally, 4, it's a marathon, not a sprint. I now realize that everything I've learned in my life so far has been based in sexism, racism, ableism, classism, neurotypicalism, ageism, all the isms. Our brains are scientifically, historically, and socially conditioned to have bias. So I must question every single thing. I try to put everything through the lens of belonging now. I ask myself, who is being left out? Who is not being considered? Why would these decisions be made? Who do they benefit? Sometimes it's mind-boggling, really, to take it all in. So resting is okay. It's actually healthy and deepens lifelong learning. Rest, as you all know, is an essential part of the care required for this kind of gender equity work to be sustainable. So as you can see, over the years, my own learning curve at WAM has never stopped. Alongside all that growth, WAM started with a budget of $10,000 and 1 volunteer person, me, in 2010. In 2015, when I spoke to Zonta in the Berkshires, the budget was $240,000 with 8 part-time staff, one of whom was me. And now, as I prepare to step down from WAM, our budget is $500,000 with 2 full-time staff, one of whom is me, 4 part-time staff, and an incredibly committed community of volunteers. For me, that is huge growth. We're really proud of that growth, and we've worked hard for it, And we plan to continue working hard for it, just as all of you do here, and especially now, when issues of equality for women and girls, and indeed for all, continue to be so urgent. But I will not be the one working directly towards that at WAM anymore, because in June 2022, I announced to the board and the team that I would be stepping down at the end of the year. I'm going to skip a little bit of the rest that I was going to say because I got my 5-minute warning. So I'm going to find, here we go. Founding WAM has been the most meaningful experience of my professional life thus far, but nurturing it to a place where I know that I can step aside and it is 200% ready to fly to the next phase of impact without me is such an accomplishment. I'm proud to say that over 40 people applied for my job. And just last week, we interviewed the final 3 candidates, and I was so proud. These 3 extraordinary women, all so passionate about the organization and this job that I had created from nothing. So all I can say is that I'm glad it's the team and the board that have to make the decision on who to hire, because I would not have a clue. As for what I'm going to do next, as some of you have likely done, I'm leaping, as they say, without a net, which is completely terrifying. On the good days, I feel really hopeful and courageous. And on the bad days, I feel really scared and irresponsible. But deep down, I know that it's the right thing to do. So I continue to find ways to explore different opportunities and remain hopeful that some will also come my way. There's really not much that I know for sure right now as I leap into the unknown with courageous vulnerability. But one thing I know for sure is that Zonta will remain an important part of my future. You really have an incredible organization, and you are doing such incredible and important work. The greatest opportunity that we all have is to inspire, as Donna was saying, a whole new generation of women to join our ranks to help effect change for women and girls. We are indeed stronger together. So I will continue to do what I can to encourage more women to join Zonta, and together we will continue to effect some beautiful change. Thank you again to Donna and Mary and the Berkshire Club for getting me here to the Berkshires. And I really hope you enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you. Mm-hmm.